Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, it's been a while. Welcome back to the Full Throttle podcast from Eurosport, episode 93 and the start of season 4. This is the podcast that existed before the lockdown. James Whittam and me, Greg Haynes, with you. We're in the commentary box. We've just gone off air on Eurosport 2 and the Eurosport app for the opening round of the season for the 2021 Superbike World Championship. And a real mix in emotions, James, I think, across the race weekend for everybody in the paddock. But first of all, how are you? Have you had a good winter?
Yeah, good. Yeah, caught with all the sort of silliness and restrictions quite well, I think. It's been difficult for everybody, but I think we've coped pretty well. Up there at Huddersfield International Airport.
Yeah.
So, we're all right. And I know a lot of people have had it a lot worse than we have. So, yeah, I'm quite happy.
There's a real sense of purpose in life again now, isn't it? I suppose that more so for us, perhaps, because the season's finished. But in general, it feels like things are just about starting to get back to normality.
A little bit of light at the end of the tunnel, I think. And it's good to get back to the racing and start seeing the people that you get on with and you like working with. So, yeah, we're all right.
So just a few quick fire questions first. Give me a yes or a no to these. Was it all about Jonathan Rea and Scott Redding fighting for the title this year before the season started? Yes or no?
Yes, I think so.
I think so as well. Is Jonathan Rea still the favourite after Aragon?
Yes.
What are they going to have to do to beat him then? That's not a yes or a no, obviously, but what are they going to have to do to beat him?
Up the game slightly. I mean, you know, I said it before and I still stand by it. To beat Jonathan Rea in a race, you maybe choose a better tyre choice or, you know, you make the most of a condition. It's possible. But to beat him over a season when he and the team, we've said it before, it's getting boring. They just don't make that many mistakes. Mostly that's down to Jonathan, I feel. But the team's good. The Kawasaki team don't have any other major championship to compete in at world level. So this is an important one for them. The world championship is there. Their sort of showcase, their shop window in terms of international racing and put a lot of effort in and they don't get much wrong.
We must start with Jonathan Rea because he achieved his 100th career victory on Saturday and then made it 101 in the sprint race on Sunday morning. That is absolutely phenomenal, isn't it? As a sporting achievement, not just in motorcycle racing or motor racing, but sport in general. That is amazing, isn't it?
Yep, he's completely dominated the championship now for the last forever. And for me, there's nothing really that I can spot in his makeup and his approach and his aggression and his determination that's going to stop him, you know, having the chance to dominate for the next 3 or 4 years. It's an amazing thing. And that's out of Johnny. You know, you can, even when he was riding the Honda that was less competitive when he had it, the Tenkata bike, there were times when he rode the wheels off that thing. It was magical to watch. I remember 1 year at Assen, and it was just fantastic. I mean, just lovely to watch. The man can ride a bike right to the limit. I do feel that sometimes when you're watching a rider do that, you've got to have ridden a bike to a reasonable level to actually understand what he's doing. You know, and it was magical. So, yeah, it's mostly that Jonathan is at.
101 wins now, 15 of them with Honda. 86 now, of course, with Kawasaki. There was a lovely video that was produced by Dorna and sent out to all of their broadcasters. It's been all over social media as well, certainly on Eurosport and our programme on Sunday. So many tributes. It was clearly a video that had been recorded last year, wasn't it? Because he could well have done the 100 before the end of last season, but had a bit of a strange weekend at Estoril back in October. But to see the delight, and people are so pleased from, aren't they? We saw tributes there from Fogarty, from Rossi, Agostini, Lewis Hamilton, Neil Hodgson. I mean, loads. That's just naming a few, but not just from motor racing.
Yeah, I was just
cycling.
Say, exactly.
All
not
sorts of
just
sports.
From the world of motorsport. We had top cyclists. We had a couple of footballers in there. The captain of the Northern Irish football team, and you know, it was really nice to see that.
Yeah, really, really nice to see. And I think it must be remembered, you know, the contribution Jonathan Rea. You know, he's putting World Superbikes back on the map, I think it's fair to say, compared to, you know, the Premiership football, let's say, or Formula One car racing. They're massive. Motor racing is big, but most things now these days, sport in general, is on pay TV. Great, we've got the bikes, of course, on Eurosport and Quest for the Superbike Championships in the UK and the World Championship. But it's great when you've got someone like that really putting it on the map. He's got an MBE, he's second in BBC Sports Personality of the Year. You know, he met Prince William from the MBE. All these awards outside of...
Man who dominates outside of racing like he has, a world championship sport, deserves what he's getting, you know. Certainly in Northern Ireland, he's a folk hero because, you know, he's the dominant sportsman across any sport.
Would you say...
Oh, here we go.
Would you say he's quite possibly the greatest British motorcycle racer of all time?
It's difficult, and you know, I hate that kind of question because how can you compare Jonathan Rea to Barry Sheen or to Phil Reed or to Mike Aylward? It's impossible. Times are different, bikes are different, tyres are different. You can only compare people to their peers in their time, and stacks up fairly well in that, doesn't he?
What it does mean, of course, is that there's a lot of people out there who are absolutely determined to beat him, or... Might sound nasty to say this, but there's a lot of people who like to see the dominant man fail. And I think it's fair to say there are more than one person in the paddock, as you'd expect in a competitive environment, on Saturday evening, thinking, ugh, here we go again. Because we finished that Saturday race, and I think for any neutral of the championship, we were thinking, ah, we were just hoping it was going to be a closer race than that, because Jonathan Rea disappeared, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Just did a better job of... Things have changed at the beginning of this year. Lots of bikes have changed. BMW's got virtually a new bike. We've got Yamaha made a lot of changes to their bike. Kawasaki's got a new bike. And the big problem for all those teams when they've got a lot of new parts to try and a new bike to try and get in the ballpark is that the amount of test days they are allowed has been capped at 10, two or three of which most teams have used already. And that runs right through to the end of the season. So, Kawasaki just did a better job of knowing when to start racing the bike they got instead of chasing a magical kind of base setting that was perfect. And between him, Jonathan Rea and the team, they did a great job. But I've got to doff my cap to the other Kawasaki KRT rider, Alex Lowes. He did an equally good job for him. He's had a cracking start to the season. Didn't quite manage to beat his teammate, but he was close and he had the pace.
And that's three podium finishes for Alex Lowes following a difficult off-season, let's not forget. He had a really nasty motocross crash in February and he's had to a load of physiotherapy in Barcelona every single day for weeks and weeks and weeks on end. So to overcome that and come back, what a psychological achievement as well as a physical one.
Yeah, and you know, we saw him interviewed and we've chatted with him and he seems relaxed. You know, even before the racing, it's easy to be relaxed when you've had a meeting as good as Alex has had.
But what a difference though, James, because Alex used to come into the garage and smash things around at Yamaha and Suzuki before, you know, when he first came into World Superbike, get really annoyed. He's so much more mature now. He's got experience on his side.
Yeah, I think he understands. Yeah, I think he understands the sort of long game now a little bit more and speaks very well, understands the job, knows he's had a good weekend, seems pretty relaxed. And more than that, seems to be enjoying his racing. It's easy to say somebody who's winning is enjoying the racing or having a good weekend like on the track that Alex has had, but it just seems to be a bit more settled, I think.
Okay, let's go through manufacturer by manufacturer then with a quick summary. But actually, before we do that, I think we need to listen in, don't we, from Jonathan Rea, because 100 race victories is something very, very, very special. And here's what Jonathan had to say after that great achievement for himself and for Northern Ireland on Saturday afternoon.
It's a career landmark, you know, it's one of them things when I retire, it's a nice round number, you know, to think about, and honestly, I've never been a stat guy. Never thought about lap race wins or fastest laps records. But when that 100th victory was creeping up, I started to think more and more, and it became a focus. And now we have it so early in the season, it's time to put that to bed and start to focus on building a championship. So, yeah, just so blessed to be in this position with an amazing team and family. And, yeah, I feel incredible right now. So, thank you.
I think more people appreciate just how good the guy is. We already know, but once he's retired and, you know, time's gone on, and then we look back at all of these Jonathan Rea records, people are going to think, wow,
yeah,
he really was good, wasn't he?
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, so just before that, I said, let's go through the manufacturers quickly then. Kawasaki, James, just if you can, I know we've spoken about it on the telly, but for anybody who missed the broadcast and is catching up with the podcast here, just quickly sum up what they've done on the bike. There's a lot of aero changes there, aren't there?
Yeah, Kawasaki, lots of changes. The bike's the same layout, same geometry, same weight distribution. They made slight changes to the engine, slightly different piston, trying to make the bike rev a little bit harder. And most of the changes have been to the aerodynamics, and especially to the front of the fairing. They haven't gone for the wing that's like most of the other manufacturers are going for now. They've gone for a ducted downforce system on either side of the big duct in the middle that feeds air to the engine. Also, they've been really clever about where the hot air that's gone through the radiator and therefore cooled the engine is exited out the back of the bike. So that adds to the aerodynamic efficiency. They've also made a slightly bigger top end to the fairing, not only to house the outer ducts that give the downforce, but also to give the rider a bit of an easier time and make the bike a bit more efficient down the straight and a bit quicker. Also, if you look, there's a little chin to the front of the fairing, just above the wheel, and that's part of the sort of wing downforce system as well. And they've done a good job, in my opinion. Certainly, they've made a bike that looks a bit quicker. And we're talking about a bike that's never been the quickest on track, but it's certainly one of the most efficient.
It seems like they've done a lot of work with electronics as well, doesn't it? You get the feeling there with Davide Giontillo, who, of course, came across from Yamaha. They formerly worked with Magneti Marelli as well.
I think he's the man that used to work for Magneti Marelli. He's a clever lad, yeah.
Okay, that's Kawasaki. Ducati, is there much new on the Ducati this year?
I don't think, there's nothing, I haven't been in the garage with a camera, but there's nothing really been posted. These teams develop the whole time, and there will be parts coming through. To me, it looks a very similar bike. Certainly the exhaust pipe's changed. You can see that when you're watching the footage. Small changes, I'm sure, but nothing major that's been sort of posted in the press. That said, I still think the bike, even though from what the riders are saying, certainly from what we hear from Chas Davison, from Scott Redding, the bike is finicky about what conditions it likes, what grip level it likes, and what tyres it can make work. It's still a good bike. That is still an efficient and fast bike to me.
It seemed like Scott Redding was quite confused, and he admitted it himself on Saturday. And last year, our bike was really good in the hot conditions. And if we remember Jerez, he did a double. Portimao was a new track for him, but he was solid there. And then he said it's almost as though it's gone the other way this year.
Yeah, he doesn't like the way. He doesn't like the warm temperatures. He doesn't like the feeling from the bike in the warmer temperatures. And
Why would that happen? Why can a bike be so good in the...
That's what I'm saying. The bike seems really sensitive to set up changes. And if what they said last year is the case, it's sensitive to rider weight and rider position. And you know, they were saying that the 8 or 9 kilos difference in rider weight makes a massive difference to how the bike uses a tyre. So, you know, we can take from that the bike's fairly sensitive.
I think it's fair to say relief was the overriding emotion for Scott Redding, who came through and won the third of the three races on Sunday.
Yeah, mainly thanks to a really brave tyre choice. He'd made a mess of the tyre choice in the sprint race and got it wrong, put wets on when nobody else had wets on, suffered because of it, managed to get the bike to the finish fairly well, but knew he'd made a mistake and was still prepared to go against what everybody else on the grid had on. Only he and one of the rider set off that race on full slicks. It proved to be the right choice. Conditions came to him and he made the most of it. Good choice and well ridden.
What he had to say for himself, Scott Redding.
Difficult conditions for everybody. It's a big gamble. It's not really racing as such, in my opinion. This morning I lost out due to having the rain tyre and got the victory now because I took the slick. I had to take that risk, of course, because I had to maximise what I could. But it's great to come away for a win, finally, for me and the team. It's been a difficult weekend for us. It wasn't smooth running, you know, some wrong decisions. The bike not working as good as we expected. So I'm happy to get a win. We can put Aragon behind us, one of our worst tracks last year as well, and move on to better options.
Quick reminder, don't forget you can subscribe to the Full Throttle podcast. Many thanks for joining us since we started. Season 4 already now and episode 93. So, Scott Redding there, yeah, as we said, relief. They needed that, didn't they? Because they were all
absolutely
looking very, very, very downcast,
yeah,
on
absolutely
Saturday.
Yeah, yeah. He needed it, the team needed it, and the kind of bike needed it as well. You know, it certainly they walk away with a lot more confidence than what they would have had if he hadn't have made that decent tyre choice. And championship, as far as the team are looking and as far as Scott is looking, he's still wide open. He's still very early. We're only one round in. 17-point lead in the championship for Jonathan Rea, but there's no way that Decay are giving up. It's been a long time since he's lifted that championship, mainly down to the fact that Jonathan Rea's been dominant. But yeah, there's still a lot of hope there to be had for Scott.
Been a decade, hasn't it? 10 years since Carlos Checa won that title in 2011. That's too long for a manufacturer like Ducati, and they would admit that, of course. Feels to me as though, quite possibly, the biggest improvers in terms of a manufacturer are Yamaha, because Aragon was absolutely horrendous for Yamaha last year, and they've shown some great, great pace this weekend, with Toprak in particular.
Yeah, with Toprak in particular, and in the last race with Garrett Gerloff, I thought that Garrett had a cracking ride, albeit after completely torpedoing Jonathan Rea, nearly knocking him off, having Garrett then to pick the bike up, which he did really efficiently and swiftly, got going again and still managed to, I think he could have ended up finishing, did he end up 8th, but he could have finished 6th in the end. It was a bit of a last lap sort out. He was in the group for 6th anyway. So yeah, great for Gerloff.
And he did get his podium in the sprint race, didn't he? Which
he
is
did,
easy
yeah,
for us to forget
for
now.
Him.
We come off air
got
and you forget what's happened.
Yeah, he got his season off to a good start. The Yamaha looks more efficient this year. From what I'm told, it's essentially the same homologated motorcycle, the R1, but with lots and lots of small tweaks, a lot of attention to detail and fixing small problems they had last year. There's nothing major, no redesign, no sort of major setup changes or component changes, but they've addressed a lot of smaller problems, and that's made quite a big difference in the end.
It was great to see Garrett Gerloff go up to Jonathan Rea in Parc Fermé after the sprint race. He was there anyway as the top independent rider and apologise. I personally think it's great to have someone like that. Great to see an American as well getting stuck in and at the front of the field. People will be asking those. I'm going to have to put this to you, James. Having been involved in the collision with the BMWs at Magny-Cours last year, and now Jonathan Rea on Sunday at Aragon, does he need to calm it down a bit?
It doesn't look out of control. The lad doesn't look like it's going to happen every single corner like we've seen some riders in the past. It's happened a couple of times. I always say, if you get knocked off by another rider, one of your peers, you've got to take it on the chin and accept it and be kind of, you know, you've just got to accept it. However, if it's happening every other weekend and it's the same rider who's doing it, then you've got to think that there's something kind of wrong in his approach of riding. At the minute, no, I quite like Gerloff. I think he's doing a good job. He's in a new championship. He's not done, albeit he's done a season, but he's not done a lot of riding with these guys, and still finding his feet, I think, a little bit. And he's finding his feet at the front of a world championship. So, yeah, we like people who try hard.
Yeah, and we'll come back to a few of those isolated racing incidents again in a moment. Just to finish off the manufacturers, I'd like to leave BMW until the end. So let's do the fourth, which is Honda. Quiet, I think, is the word I'd use to describe their weekend.
Yeah, they've got a fast motorcycle, definitely made improvements. Their problem has been the test cap, the amount of testing they can do in terms of days. It's only 10 and they've had some already. It's not enough to get through all the mountain of parts that Honda have produced to improve the bike, and therefore they might have the best kit available in the truck somewhere that's going to give them a leg up and get them up front in the races, but they don't know it yet because they haven't had a chance to test it, so that's going to handicap them. Some what's the word, some kind of reason to hope for better results coming. They didn't have a bad meeting, suffered with tyre choice a couple of times, but they weren't completely off the pace, were they?
No, they weren't. I'm just looking at the results for race one on Saturday. Leon Haslam was in eighth place with the SCX rear tyre and the new front tyre. And Bautista, of course, crashed, didn't he? But he was in that leading group. Not the leading group, the group for second.
Yeah.
On the last lap when he crashed with the same tyre combo. I think it's fantastic that all five of the manufacturers have been in the mix at some point across this weekend. And there's so much more to come, isn't there?
Yeah, I think so.
BMW is obviously one of them. It is amazing how people's opinions change so quickly, you know, just talking to various people from within the paddock, and a lot of people at the moment working outside the paddock because of the COVID scenario. But we've obviously been in touch with a lot of people on WhatsApp, on the phone and whatever, Twitter, across the weekend. BMW took a bit of a pounding from quite a lot of people on Saturday. And then Sunday, they're all up there. Laverty's had a few issues, so we won't include him at the moment, but certainly Folger, who went with a slick tyre like Redding did in race two. But Vandermark in particular and Tom Sykes, they were right up there fighting for the lead.
Yeah, and even in race one, Tom Sykes had a really good run in last few laps. He was putting some of the fastest, certainly his quickest laps in towards the end of race one yesterday, and some of the quickest laps of the race right towards the end. That's good. The bike looks a lot quicker this year. They've made big changes to the cylinder head. It's a lot more robust. I think that'll give them more scope to tune the bike and still have it 100% reliable, which is really important to every team, but it's very important to BMW. They see their forte as the excellence in engine building, really. They're known for that, and the reliability is a big thing for them. I think the cylinder head is going to give them scope to tune the bike with reliability. It certainly looked quicker. And in race two of the weekend, the second longer race, brilliant. Both for Vandermark, who honestly has had a terrible weekend. He's lost most of free practice, been knocked about, smashed the bike in bits when he lost it on the brakes, had other problems coming through as well, lost, like I said, laps and laps of track time, and he still managed to pull something out of the bag and look really competitive and be in the group battling for second in race two. So good for him and good for Tom Sykes as well. Lots of cause for optimism for them.
This is why bike racing is so great, isn't it? Vandermark, was he 15th, I think, on the grid? The bike was on top of that barrier on Friday afternoon. We were saying how terrible this is. He's lost all his practice time. What a nightmare to start. And it was a nightmare start to the weekend. Who on earth would have believed he'd be in the lead of the race?
Yeah,
on
probably
Sunday,
just
you know,
him.
Ahead of Jonathan
actually,
Ray and co.
So really, I haven't seen the press release yet, but I bet it's going to be fairly giddy because they were sort of making it sound really positive after race one, and it wasn't as good. So yeah, I think a good weekend for in the end for BMW.
Yeah, optimism there. Back to, let's get the thoughts of Tom Sykes.
In the meantime, out there at Aragon, we saw a really strong performance from Tom Sykes, and I'm really glad to say that he joins us now. I'm sure there's a big smile under that mask there, Tom, because that was much more like it today, wasn't it?
Yeah, to be honest, you know, it's been a strange old day, and I think it's fair to say we had a slightly royal mistake, shall we say, in the sprint race, which wasn't like us, and we got caught out there, and certainly put us on the back foot for the long race. But luckily, we had a decent recovery. The guys went off. I went out on the sighting lap, and I thought, do you know what? I fancy a go on slicks here, but considering what happened in the sprint race, I played it a little bit safer with the intermediates and the majority of the field. Apart from Scott, he obviously had a big set today and he went for it. And honestly, I think overall I let the guys go because the intermediates are really quite soft and the race came to me. So I was happy enough with that. Unfortunately, I got a little bit stuck behind Toprak. He's blooming heck. I always thought I was quite fruity on the brakes, but he's something else. So Toprak and then my teammates. So I just lost a touch to the podium. But the main thing is I think everybody's seen the improvement in the engine performance. And if you screenshot where we were here last year to now, you know, and the gap to the front, it's some improvement. So lots, you know, has been learnt and looking forward to moving on.
Should we talk about track limits? Because You were a bit frustrated, weren't you, on Saturday? And I think a lot of people would agree with you for what happened at the end of Super Pole with Toprak Razgatlioglu.
Yeah, well, what happened is, we all know that track limits are defined by the green portion of painted tarmac, because all new modern circuits don't have, like you get at Cadwell Ulton, they don't have tarmac and then a white line about 2 inches wide and then grass. That obviously, you go on the grass, you're going to crash. There's no grip. So that's almost self-regulating.
Grap's a good word, by the way.
Grap. Grass at the side of the track is self-regulating. You don't want to go onto it, therefore you make efforts not to do. If you do, you're punished anyway. Modern-day circuits like to be set up, especially for cars, where there's big, huge chunks, swathes of tarmac on the outside of the track. So if a car spins off, it doesn't get stuck in the gravel and you know, you lose a car out of the race and therefore make it not an exciting race. So for bikes, it means you can run wide, and on especially the lower powered bikes, you can run off the track, still keep the grip because it's still tarmac, even though it's painted, and gain an advantage. So what they say now is if you run off the track, you can be penalised. If you run onto the curbing, which is the painted yellow and red, in this case, Aragon section, you're not penalised. If you run across that onto the green, painted tarmac outside the track, yes, you're penalised. But actually, there should be some kind of common sense kind of put to that, because Razgatlioglu was going to finish. He was on for a second row start, which would have given him a lot better chance, and in my opinion, the best chance of anybody of going and racing with Jonathan Rea and making it exciting for us. He ran onto the straight and actually just clipped onto the green on the left-hand side on the straight when there was nothing to gain, and yet they still docked him at four positions on the grid and put him back to a row. So
10th it was, yeah. Yeah, so I mean, do you think he did even gain anything? Because somebody
he didn't
was
gain anything.
I'm sure I heard.
And it should have been.
I think he was even
the discretion
slower in that
of
sector.
The organisers to say, yeah. Do you know what? He didn't gain anything. We're gonna cost ourselves chance of an exciting race here. But you know, if they stick into the rules, rules are rules, and everybody knows it. So you know, they're in the right, really. But you know.
Yeah, I like the fact. I do like the fact that race direction is very, very much separate from the commercial interest of the championship, in the sense that, you know, you're not going to say there's a bit of a vested interest there or anything like that. But at the same time, they do want a good show, don't they? And it's not even like he gained an advantage by doing that.
The fact is, there's got to be some arbitrary aspect of it, because especially in the Supersport 300 race, there's lots of people in that class use the green part of the tarmac and therefore exceed track limits, sometimes to gain advantage. But a lot of times it's because they can't see who's in front of them. They can't see where the track is. They're in a pack of 10 people.
Yeah, or they've been pushed off.
Vying for each other. They're all banging handlebars. So there has to be an arbitrary kind of element to it, because if you get punted out onto the green portion of the track and the alternative was to lock handlebars and have two riders crash, well, the organisers don't penalise in that instance. So, you know, I think it was a bit harsh on Toprak, yeah.
Well, Shakey and James Hayden certainly gave their opinions on track limits as well. Let's have a listen in. It was quite amusing, actually, as they were chatting with Matt in the studio.
Yeah, in the old days, you might have had grass there and you wouldn't have touched it. Or, you see guys kicking up dirt. They could put AstroTurf there and stop people going on it. But they've extended the tracks now for these extra bits. But it's not like you're seeing guys go miles off track. You're seeing little infringements that then are getting penalised so hard they ruin the race and they ruin qualifying. I just... The line's the line. And very rarely, it's not like you're seeing people take these massive sweeping arcs going off track to come back on. It's not happening. You're seeing people maybe nab a bit of that much, and if everyone's doing it, what does it matter? I don't see what the big deal is. It
James Hayden's never liked track limits or anything like that.
No, but what do you do? There's got to be some limit. We know these tracks don't have grass outside the tarmac that's obviously self-penalising, and if you didn't have any kind of track limit and you could run onto the tarmac that they had at the side of the track, well, especially in that Supersport 300 class, they'd be 20 or 30, 40 feet off the actual track and it'd be chaos. So
I suppose another thing you could say is, okay, that green stuff's there for safety, but on the other hand, is that an ironic thing considering they're racing motorcycles and it's quite dangerous anyway?
Yeah, but you've got to make it as safe as you can, and the fact is that the tracks, for whatever reason, whether it be for the benefit of the cars that have to race on the same circuit, there is tarmac off the track, off the side of the track.
I suppose you've got to be realistic as well. You know, it comes down to money as well. You can't have bike-specific tracks and car-specific tracks. You know, these venues have to be able to cater for both, don't they? That's why there's that FIM /FIA double curve that exists as well. It's a sort of compromise curve. Let's talk about Tito Rabat. He's a big name. He's coming across from MotoGP, ex-Moto2 world champion. You have to think and hope there's more to come from Tito Rabat. I can't say I'm surprised that it's been a difficult start, though. It often does happen. Some Grand Prix riders come in and make a huge impression. It's been difficult for Tito all across testing, hasn't it, really?
Yes, yeah, coming back from a massive injury in MotoGP, but albeit that he's ridden MotoGP already to get his iron, he's done quite a bit of testing on the superbike. So
he had a problem, to be fair, didn't he, in the Saturday race? It broke down.
Crashed as well.
On Sunday, yeah.
But to be honest, I expected more. I think he needs to produce more. I think he'd agree with me in that. Yeah, there's a lot of differences between this a superbike and a MotoGP bike. He's complained about the getting the bike stopped, and one of the biggest differences, there's a lot of differences, they're all big, but the brakes are a big difference between MotoGP and World Superbike. World Superbike have to run steel brake discs, or steel brakes is what they're called. MotoGP can run carbon, so carbon discs on carbon pads. The difference is the carbon pads... and carbon disc setup's a lot lighter, less unsprung weight, helps the bike turn a little bit, but also the hotter the carbon fibre brakes get, the more they work, and it's quite the opposite. It's conversely, with the steel brakes, the hotter they get, the more they fade. So,
another quick yes-no one, if you can, and then we'll elaborate. Two-part question. Number one, when it was announced, did you think Ducati had made the right decision to swap Chas Davis and Michael Rinaldi?
No, because I like Chas Davis. I think he finished third in the championship and won rounds.
Yeah, so, and you still agree with that now, I guess.
Yes.
So what do you make of what Rinaldi's done this weekend? It's been quiet as well, hasn't
it? He's looked quiet, and I think it's difficult to say, you know, we're at sort of arm's length through all of this, and we're sort of speculating. But to me, when you get hired to race for a factory team, they're number one... You never seem to have any excuses. You can't have any excuses. You've got a factory team. You've got the best equipment available. And therefore, you have to perform. So that is a certain pressure. Yeah. Some riders cope well with it. Some don't. And I'm just wondering whether Michael Ruben Rinaldi is feeling the pressure a little bit. I hope he isn't. He's a nice bloke. But he's been quiet this weekend.
And in Sunday's race too, Chas Davis actually set the fastest lap, didn't he? And then... crashed. He could have been right up there in that fight at the front as well.
No, he crashed and then set the fastest lap.
Oh, it was the other way around. Of course it was. Yeah,
yeah,
sorry.
He crashed on wet.
He then changed to slicks. Yeah.
Came in, swapped to slicks. That's and it. Got back out again. And so actually even then he didn't score points.
So, yeah, so he wouldn't have gone off with Redding at the front, would he? Because had he not crashed, he wouldn't have been on slicks. He would have still been on
wets.
On
yeah.
Wets, yeah.
And he'd struggle, yeah.
So, okay, well, it just shows how important tyres are once again, doesn't it?
Completely.
What about the depth of the Superbike field now, James? Because that's something World Superbike's taken a lot of stick for in the last 5-6 years, perhaps. It's really there, though, isn't it, now this year? We've got,
I think it is, yeah.
Fantastic riders on brilliant motorcycles, wonderful teams. You know, mistakes are going to be very, very heavily punished.
Yeah, and I think you've got to look at as the race is going on, we get the benefit of looking at a really complicated, comprehensive timing screen. Yeah. Gives you sector times between each rider, fastest lap, fastest speeds, everything. And for example, in race one of the weekend yesterday, Leon Haslam was putting some cracking laps in. He was lying about, 6th or 7th? And he was lapping as quick as anybody else in the race. I mean, fair enough. Jonathan Rea was 3 seconds up the road and could afford more than 3 seconds up the road and could afford not to be going as quick as he was able to go. But still, you look and you think, you know, there's probably a couple of 3 seconds covering, you know, second to 8th or 9th. And that's quite close racing.
So is all this then perhaps because Jonathan Rea has a better understanding of the fact you do need to start at the front, you do need to make a good start to get 3 seconds up the road, because otherwise he might not be able to do that?
Correct.
So why can no one else do that then? Because I know it's easy for me to say this, but...
It's so easy sat there as a non-motorcycle racer Greg.
Of course,
there's so many aspects to it. You've got to get a bike that works on different kinds of circuits. The team's got to work for you. And you've got to make some inspired choices. When he and Jonathan Rea could do it every single weekend. When was the last time he made a bad tyre choice? Even if that tyre choice meant that at the end of the race, it was 2 seconds slower than most of the people. When at the beginning of the race, he knew he had to go out and nail it and use the best of that treaded tyre, for example, and get up the road because he'd slip back later on. He just makes all the right decisions. And consistently, and year in, year out, he keeps doing it.
And it's not all just because of age, is it? Because yes, Toprak's younger and far less experienced. The same goes for somebody like Michael Rinaldi or Garrett Gerloff. But there's plenty of riders around Jonathan's age as well with the same or very similar or perhaps even a little bit more experience. So it's not even just that, is it?
It's everything. It's experience. It's skill. It's having a team around you that knows how to treat you and what to give you. Having talent, isn't it?
Well, you certainly got bucketfuls of that. Right, last feedings from us then. Okay, so we go to Estoril this coming weekend, back-to-back rounds to start the season, James. We should quickly actually touch on the Supersport class, the Supersport 300. Tom Booth Amos leads the championship. Great weekend.
Yeah, great weekend for Tom Booth Amos. He's a good lad. For the last couple of years, he has been one of the consistently quickest men in the Supersport 300 class. However, it's such a close class. There's other good riders in it. The bikes are all absolutely dead even for the most part. It's really easy to get involved in accidents, to get punted, to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, to get shoved off the track. And this happens not just to Tom Booth Amos, it happens to everybody. So, for example, Geoffrey Bruys, the Dutchman, great little rider, won here twice, twice last year.
Three times, out of four.
Right, and was up front in the second race of this weekend. Ends up getting punted off the track and dropping back to 8th or 9th.
12th he was.
Yeah, and that can easily happen, and it can happen to anybody. What I would say is Tom Booth Amos does try and work it out. It's a difficult race to try and plan because you don't know where you're going to be in relation to everybody else. But
it's so true, though, because every time he gets pushed back to second, he never likes to be any lower than second, does he?
He doesn't.
He comes straight back
through
again.
What he wanted was to get the distance of the slipstream probably 20 metres in front and then go away at the front. Couldn't do that. Realised they didn't want to lead it going on to the back straight on the last lap because that'd give three or four people behind him, maybe more, the chance to slipstream him and therefore he wouldn't win. So he knew he needed to be second or third onto that back straight. He engineered that really well, which is very difficult.
Tried to let Adrian
Huertas
pass.
Exactly, he wouldn't have it. He knew that. He knew he didn't want to lead.
And he won the first race, of course, on Saturday.
So for me, Tom Booth Amos did everything right. He went across the line in second, which was a good result. This is in the second race of the weekend. And then was promoted to the win because your leader or winner, Aradre, had exceeded track limits, which Aradre, to his credit, he knew he'd exceeded track limits and kind of accepted it with good grace. So good weekend for Tom Booth Amos. That's not to say that he's not going to be up front the whole of the next race, which is at Imola, because he'd all go to Estoril and then ended up, you know, fifth and eighth, because that can happen in this class. It's not an easy championship to win, even if you are the quickest rider.
Yeah, Misano, isn't it? Not Imola.
I knew it was Italy.
great place as well. Shame we're not at Imola actually this year, incidentally. I would say that win for TBA was probably in the top three, certainly top five, of smartest, most calculated Supersport 300 wins so far.
Yes, I would say over the five. And there's other smart riders that's benefited from it. Anna Carrasco ended up pretty much wiggling and cajoling her way through to fifth. Good result for her. She had a lot of people to pass, didn't make good starts. She always tends to be at the right place at the right time. So, yeah, good for us. And other riders are good at it. Geoff Bruys normally is really good at it. It didn't work for him this weekend, ended up getting punted back to, what was it, 12th?
Yes, it was. Yeah, that was coming up the hill, wasn't it, on the last lap, the checkered corner. And yeah, well done to Adrian Huertas as well, the Spaniard who won on Saturday and then finished third on Sunday. So he's second in the championship.
One thing I would say about that Supersport 300 class, I'd like to see riders moving on. It seems there's no clear path through to whatever they're going to do next. It's a big step from a 50 horsepower steel-framed bike that's not really designed to be on a racetrack, and that's in all the case, not just Kawasaki, that's Yamaha, that's all of them. And it's a great championship in terms of excitement for us. But where are they going to go after this championship? Most of the people who've won that championship are still in that championship, and that's not what was intended in the first place.
they're all still in it, aren't they? Apart from one, Mark Garcia is still there. He'd gone and come back. Mark Garcia, Carrasco's still there.
Yeah.
Manu Gonzalez has gone up to Supersport 600, and
has been a front runner as well. So
yeah, reigning champion.
You know, one of the lads who won it was Scott DeRue. He's not even racing anymore. So it's you know, it seems a bit of a sort of what's the word? Dead end road, really, but I don't want to say that. But
and Mickey Perez, who was one of the front runners the first few seasons, I was chatting with him the other day. He's not in it now. That's all to do with money. So he's offering the CEV stock 600 class, I think it is. So yeah, we'll have to see what happens with that one. Well, what are they going to do then? There's no stock 1000 anymore in World Superbike. No stock 600.
You know,
tricky one.
Don't know what the answer is. I've not thought about it, but it just seems to me that it is a little bit of a. I mean, is it so wrong to be a you know, a specialist in the smaller classes? You get people like Angel Nieto that won 13 world championships. He used to say 12 plus 1 because he was superstitious, but you know, he tried 250s, he even had to go on a 500 a couple of times and was all right on them, but he specialised in the smaller classes, the 125s and the 50s. So, and other people did that, you know, Ricardo Tormo, Stefan Dorflinger. Is there anything wrong with that? There's always. We look on the smaller classes now as holy feeder classes for the major classes, but there's something to be said for, especially in a smaller bike class, maybe. I don't know.
Well, they are certainly still. World championships, aren't they?
Yeah.
As you say, you know,
still
we've had the 50cc, 80cc, 125s, 250s MotoGP, and then here you've got Supersport 300, 600 Superbike. They are all world championship categories.
Correct. But we look down on the smaller classes now just because we see them all as feeder classes.
I think feeder classes, actually, it's a good...
Please, an envelope.
Yeah, it's a good one, actually, because you look at feeder classes now and you think of things like the CEV Moto3 Championship, the Moto3 Junior World Championship, Red Bull Rookies, MotoGP.
It's all engineered to sort of shove people towards the bigger classes, which, you know, maybe we want that or maybe we don't. Maybe there's room for, you know, a class where you want to specialise in it and dominate that. Fine. And then, that's how it used to be, and it used to work.
Yeah, and then there's a load of support classes at all the national championships around the world as well, of course. Talking of World Supersport then, this weekend, we can't not talk about Jules Cousel, can we? Unbelievable mixture of emotions, good and bad. But
complete roller coaster.
Saturday, let's talk about Saturday.
Saturday, he's been pretty much quickest most of the weekend. Got off in the lead of Supersport Race 1, pulled away a little bit. Another man who was having a great weekend to that point, in fact, a qualified pole in the end, I think, was... Cluzel was pole, second, but who had been quickest, was Nicky Toole, the Finnish rider on the MV, the only rider in the field on the MV. He was making it really work for him. He's a really good kid. We're really pleased to see him on the front row. He came through the pack in race one of the Supersports and started taking it to Jules Cousel. It was clearly going to be them two for the rest of the race, pushing at the front. He tried to get the inside down into the really fast, coming off the big left-hander of 10... into 11, tried to go up the inside. Cousel didn't see him, shut the door inadvertently because he hadn't seen him. He couldn't back out the move, couldn't Nicky Toole. Clipped the back end of Cousel. They both went down in a big old pile of poop. Nicky Toole was knocked out. Cousel, to be fair to him, was upset at first, but went over when he saw that Nicky was injured, and like any rider would, and especially a rider with his... he's a lovely lad, and he's a fellow rider. You don't want to see people getting hurt. Luckily, Tooley wasn't hurt. He was knocked out and he's going to miss the next round. But Cousel, just desperately unlucky. Yet again, a big crash, robbing him of points and maybe costing the championship at the end of the year. We don't know. When it wasn't his fault. However, Supersport 2, in damp and difficult conditions today, I mean, just how good was Cousel? He got through it. Tire pressures were checked on the line. He was found to be under the minimum limit. They only checked three people on the starting line. He was under slightly, a minuscule amount under the minimum tire pressure. He was made, therefore, to start from the back row. He did force his way through to the lead. The conditions helped a little bit. They were sketchy and a bit damp and ended up finishing third, which was just a cracking result for Jules. Really pleased for Steve Odendaal, the South African on the Evan Brothers bike. He had a cracking weekend, but you've got to feel happy a little bit that Cousel salvaged something.
Still quite clear as well, not taking anything away from Odendaal because it was phenomenal what he did. It's his second season now, but that bike does still have a very handy straight line speed advantage, doesn't
it? Yeah, he seems to have a little bit of an advantage. You can't really take anything away from Stephen Odendaal. He's a good kid, always got a smile on his face.
Yeah, really nice.
Pleased he leads a championship.
Really nice guy.
The bike is good and the team's good. And there's not a lot you can do in terms of, you know, major tuning changes to a super sport bike. It's a fairly it's a fairly strict set of regulations that all these guys ride for or tune to and race with. But the team, team's attention to detail, that Evan Brothers team is uncanny. They, you know, the things like measuring the conrods. You can only use standard conrods, but they get a lot of conrods, measure them, get the ones that's balanced, that don't upset the engine in terms of balance, therefore produce slightly more power. And everything's done just right. And it's lots of tiny little kind of moves like that that give them a slight advantage.
Can other teams, seems a bit ridiculous and obvious to say this, but can other teams not try and copy that approach then and do that
too?
Yeah,
they can, but I mean, they're just good at it. And there's not a massive difference, but there's a difference.
Yeah, and I suppose you just add all those little differences together around the lap and, you know, the straights.
End of the
day,
you still got to ride the bike, and Odendaal did that.
All right, so Estoril this weekend, you think that's going to be a good one for Yamaha? I mean, Toprak was very good at Estoril last year, wasn't he, back in October? Two races out of three, he won.
Yeah.
It's exciting, though, because we don't know what's going to happen, and that was not a great track for Jonathan Rea and Kawasaki. It was good, but it wasn't great.
No, and there is no bad track for Jonathan Rea, but some tracks are not as good as others, and it would appear that Estoril's one of the ones that... But hey, there's no telling they're not going to arrive there with a new bike. You know, work the way they always work, and he worked the way he always works, and they're going to end up with the best bike, with the best rider. So you never ever... Well, not that we're writing him off, but you never ever write Jonathan Rea off. There's no telling he might come out the gates at Estoril swinging again.
The thing is, it just feels, though, doesn't it, for everyone else, that... can't necessarily just win the championship. You almost need Kawasaki to lose the championship.
Yeah, there's a little bit of,
you need some problems or mistakes.
There's a little bit of a feeling.
Always feels
that,
a bit like that, doesn't it?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
We'll see. It's going to be fascinating. Can't wait. Friday morning, then, we'll be live again on Eurosport Television and the Eurosport app. Quick trip home for us, then, and then we're back underway again, aren't we? Have you got anything on this week? Anything interesting?
I got a track day on Tuesday, one of my track training days at Mallory Park. It's sold out, hoping for a bit of good weather. I'll be up there with Lee Johnston, Dean Harrison. I think we've got Dan Linfoot there instructing and others, I think. Well, anyway, we've got a bunch of BSB instructors.
It's not your first one back, is it, or is it?
No, we've had some back, since lockdown. Yeah, we're allowed to run now. If you're going to socially distance, no better way of doing it than having a helmet on, going around a racetrack on your own bike, away from everybody else. So I'm looking forward to that, and then looking forward to seeing you again, Greg.
Oh, there's no sarcasm there at all, is there? And thank you for buying my sandwich at lunchtime, by the way. It was actually, what was it, chicken and mayo sort of thing, wasn't it?
Very I know nice you're indeed. Watching your weight, so I thought I'd get you a chicken.
I'm not, actually. Well, I am and I'm not, but yeah. Actually, as a motorcycle racer and athlete yourself, what would you do for losing weight? Any
Stop
tips?
Stop eating, mate.
I can't just not eat there, can I?
As much.
But I love Cadbury's Dairy Milk. On that bombshell, we'll see you on Friday for Estoril Free Practice. James, thanks. And actually, jokes aside, I've got to say, it was a pleasure to be back in. Yeah, I have missed you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.